Hey, I'm Andrew Coates. I'm the host of the Lift Free and Diet Hard podcast. Today, I'm joined by Shayna Garcia, an IFBB Pro competitor and coach based in Perth, Australia. Today, you're going to get the value of an IFBB Pro card and if it's enough to set you up as a coach or if it's just a starting point, why dedication and care for your clients works, the importance of relatability as a coach, dealing with the pressure to maintain a certain look while balancing physical and mental health as a coach and a competitor, how to encourage a winning mindset with your clients, and much more. Stay tuned. Hey, everyone. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you back. I am here today with Shayna Garcia. It's actually really cool to have you on the show. Early morning and my evening because you're in Western Australia in Perth. And I pulled you on here because I love your media. It resonates positivity. I love your care for your clients, something that just shines through your media. So, and it seems like you're really doing well with it. So I wanted to dive right in. Welcome.
Thank you. I am so happy to be here. So I just had to press the record button. I'm so excited to be here. So I was really pleased when you asked me to come to this podcast.
I've seen your media for a while, so I've been enjoying it, like I said. So one of the cool things is you are an IFBB Pro bikini.
Yes.
And that's a really cool, I guess, title. I mean, I suppose some people can see it as a status symbol. And it earns, it's hard earned for sure. And like I said, it grants status within the industry. So I wanted to plumb the depths of this. For starters, a lot of people go get the IFBB Pro card and then they think it entitles them to just be a coach. And I found that some of them just do the bare minimum. So is it enough?
So I used to think so. Initially, when I first started coaching, my goal was, okay, I want to get my pro card and that's going to create a successful business for myself. And I think that's what a lot of people think, like if they're an athlete and they get into the coaching side of things. What I've gotten to learn over the years, that it actually has a very small percentage of growth in your business. You get a little bit of recognition, you get that exposure, but the competing side of things is not the same as coaching at all. And so over the years, I did get to learn that it's the time and efforts I put into my business and caring about my clients is what made my business grow. And the title of being an IFBB Pro was it's just a status. It's a status. It goes as far as, okay, she's an IFBB pro. She's got the experience. She shreds, she bulks. Well, that's kind of it from there. But a lot of lifestyle clients as well don't really understand the processes. So it's not going to apply to everyone.
So
is it enough? No, it's not enough, but I used to think so.
Well, what has it done for your career? Because you alluded to that, didn't seem like it was a whole lot, but has it opened any doors for you, any opportunities?
It's helped me understand what it's like to be in a coach's shoes as well as a client's shoes as well. So I guess being able to relate as an athlete and as a coach has helped me a lot with bringing in more athletes onto my team.
It seems like you have a really big roster. I mean, if you go, I'm going to tell people to go follow you.
Knock on wood.
and they're going to see your story. And it's like just constant updates of these girls. And do you exclusively coach women?
No. So I do have men on my team as well. It's just the women, they post a lot.
Fair. Makes sense. From time to time,
I'll post some of the guys on the team as well. I don't have any bodybuilders on the team just yet, though, just lifestyle.
No, fair. What percentage of your clientele is competitive and what percentage is lifestyle, roughly?
Competitive, I would say about maybe 30%.
Okay.
It seems like that most of them are competitors, and I think a lot of people think I'm just a bodybuilding coach, but the majority of my clients are actually lifestyle.
Well, I mean, when we share our clients on our media, you're probably only seeing a small cross-section of clients. I mean, for me, yes. 90% of my clients that are visible is just Larry. And I have tons of clients. Larry is a unique personality that everybody sort of loves. And it's a sort of ongoing narrative. So I just post a lot of him, whereas a lot of my clients are very content to kind of exist in the background. Back when I would just post exclusively on Facebook years ago, I would put up more of everybody. But I think just due to the sheer size of Instagram now, there are definitely some that I don't even have to ask because I know they would be uncomfortable with being, quote, on display in front of such a large audience. So I don't even like try to catch any video of them doing anything.
Yeah, there are so many people I would say like that haven't been discovered like on this team yet. And it's the same thing. Like I know that they probably wouldn't be comfortable. Some people have told me from the start that they don't ever want to be posted on social media. So I'll respect that. Not everyone's a social media person, so
No, not at all. So you mentioned like your care for your clients. We've been talking about that. That's an obvious theme. Is that something that was just always there? Like where does
like
that
caring for
dedication?
my clients.
Yeah, like because I'll contrast it because it, again, we've seen IFBB pros who just say, all right, they're coaches. And I mean, one really awful example would be I'll call him out because Sam Canato. And the reason why I'm calling him out is
Okay.
because my pal Goob has publicly torn him down because he was asking for naked photos of his female competitors. Conveniently, he was not asking for naked photos of his male competitors.
Yeah.
He said he wanted non-clothed photos and then claimed that it was due to the language difference because English is a second language. But then competitors shared stuff where he's like calling them sexy and saying inappropriate shit in private DMs and
No.
saying racist shit to one of his clients. So Goob kind
Yeah.
of like, totally destroyed this guy. But
Were these people like actually, were they giving him naked photos?
I think some were and some weren't. Yeah.
Yeah.
So,
Just
I mean,
confused with like what, checking chest muscles and.
apparently he needed, this is apparently what went on. If anybody wants to go back and down, scroll Goob's feed, John Dorsey, it's like wild the stuff he calls out, but you'll get this guy, Sam Canato. And apparently it's something to do with how he wanted to like see everywhere where they're holding body fat. And again, he's not asking for his male client photos. Okay. So put that in the box, right? So you've got bad apples who obviously are not qualified or who are misbehaving. So where does your dedication and love for this come from? And quite frankly, how important is it to a successful career?
I guess it started when I first started my career. I had my own coach as well. And I've been through quite a few coaches, and there was a difference between all of them. And I've had coaches where they would just literally take my money. And I've had coaches who would actually communicate with me and care about my results. And not until I hit that type of coach where I realized that, okay, that's the type of coach I want to be as well. And so when I'm talking to my clients, I do want to feel for them and I want to understand what it's like to be in their position and what really matters the most for them to be able to get to their results, because that's exactly how I got to mine. When my coach actually listened and cared about what I wanted and what I was trying to get out of my journey, that's where all the magic happened for me. So that's what I want to see on my team as well.
Bedside manner. We know through research that doctors and other healthcare providers, the way that they approach bedside manner has a huge relationship on patient recovery and whether or not they get sued when shit goes wrong, right? So it only stands a reason that if we approach our clients this way, it's going to have a pretty big impact. A, they're going to get better results, right? They're going to feel cared about. They're going to stick around. If they stick around, they're probably going to get better results. And you have an easier time of maintaining your business and your livelihood. It gets like so common sense, and yet still some people don't get this. Now, anybody who's listening to this self-selects to that. So I think you guys get this. I'm not worried. If you're listening and you have a coach, newer coach in your universe, share this episode with them. You know, before they've even like had the chance to dive into this stuff, it might help them. But please, you look like you had something to add.
I like every coach attracts different clientele as well. So just because we are good coaches doesn't mean we're going to be able to please everyone. So I believe that everyone that I have on my team are people that I connect with and I'm able to communicate with properly, and we're able to work together, because you have to meet halfway. I can give as much advice as possible, but if the person isn't going to put in the work, it's never going to work out.
Where do you find your clients come from? Are they coming from your media? Are they coming from word of mouth? What
A
attracts
bit
them?
of both, a bit of both. So I never really had, so the following has definitely grown in the last, I would say, year. But before that, it was referrals and a little bit of social media. I was working in gym before I went fully online. So yeah, that too.
Cool. And I'm a big believer in in-person gym experience. I don't like when people say broad sweeping gatekeeping statements like, oh, you need a minimum of 5 years on the gym floor before you earn the right to train people online. It's like, that's a bit archaic. Two thoughts. One, you can do a lot or very minimal hours across a year, depending on how busy you are. You can gain your experience faster. Two, the world we're in right now, guess what? It's changed. People are going to start training people online earlier. You've got two choices if you're somewhat of an authority in the industry. Gatekeep, to which the coaches who want to do it anyway will ignore you. Or two, help them do it in a evidence-based, ethical way so they learn the skills. Because guess what? A lot of loud grifters who yell about teaching you how to have 10K months and whatever are out there charging a lot of money for products that may or may not be very good.
Every sponsored ad.
Yeah, and it could be, some of that stuff gets actually quite predatory against trainers. And I think there are mentors who will teach online training who are great at it. Big shout out to Jonathan Goodman, good friend of mine. He's got a mentorship. There are definitely other people I like who I recommend in a heartbeat. But I mean, again, if we gatekeep this stuff, well, you just sound good and a bunch of other people agree with you, clap on social media. Are we actually making the industry better? Are the coaches were don't want to go online because they're not ready listening to you and saying, oh, shoot, this person said this. I can't do this for another 3 years. I better just stay in the gym. No, they're going to tell you. They're going to ignore you. They're going to just unfollow you, be like, I'm not listening to this person. And they're going to go listen to someone who tells them, hey, I will teach you how to be online. You'll never have to step foot in a gym in your life. Right?
See, but a lot of people that believe in that, they only think about they like the idea over what the actual process is going to be to be successful in that area. And I get a lot of people that go, oh, because you fully went online, it must be so much easier now. And I'm like, well, actually, no. it's gotten harder. So as things have grown, it gets harder. But I think a lot of people don't understand what it's like behind the scenes of being a coach, whether you're in the gym or online. There's a lot of work for both ends. Yeah.
How does because one of the themes I wanted to go early, I've got some other stuff, but you know, this idea of being an IFBB pro, you said a lot of the general population, they don't really understand maybe what it means. Now, can it ever be something that makes people dismiss you as, oh, just a competitive coach? Have you ever had any sort of issues with that? Like the credibility side of being the general population coach, which I think most of us know is probably where most of the money comes from, right?
Yeah. Well, I had one client, so she's still my client until this very day. She was on a fat loss journey, and a lot of people do know her. She's had really, really good results. We've dropped over 20 kilos. But she did explain to me that before she approached me, it took her 2 years to approach me. Yeah, because all she's seen were people like shredding up and myself competing. And so she had the idea that I was only serving bodybuilding clients and people that just wanted to shred. And she did see my lifestyle clients, but she didn't see anyone that was relatable to her. And so one day I did get a client that was on the fat loss journey. And when I posted that client, that's when she approached me and she was just like, oh my gosh, like I've been watching you for so long and I had no clue that you knew how to take care of people that wanted to go on their fat loss journeys. And although when you're serving clients that are bodybuilders, that the main goal is fat loss, but preserving the muscle, but it's a totally different thing when people get to look at it visually. So yeah, it has been a challenge, but yeah, visually, not everyone understands that. Yeah, I do serve most.
This transitions so well into another line that I wanted to go into. So it's not at all uncommon to see physique athletes and coaches who built their media heavily off of their level of leanness, their muscularity, their overall physique, to eventually turn around and talk about how difficult it is to maintain that. Now, from your media, I've seen you for a while. You are quite small. You are quite lean, right? And you look like, I think to the casual observer, they might not notice the difference between your stage readiness versus like your everyday. I mean, people who are in the know can tell the difference, but you look like you're not too many weeks away from stage most of the time. So what's been your experience with A, how hard it is to maintain that physique? Because I get everybody's different. And what kind of sacrifices have you made? Let's just start there.
So when I got my pro card, that's where like the pressure was on mentally. I felt like, okay, now I've got a pro status. I need to be pro ready all year round. In my head for a while, it did get to me. I thought, okay, I need to stay shredded and make sure that I maintain this look, but it's not sustainable. So what you see when you see athletes that are like in their peak weeks or when they're on stage, that's honestly just so temporary. And a lot of people, like, because athletes constantly post their peak weeks and just, you know, a few days leading up to the show, even show day videos and photos, that's what everyone thinks that an athlete is maintaining for the whole time. But it's just that little period. It's that little period. But coming out of the show, reversing out, mentally it has been difficult. It can get really, really hard. And it does get to me sometimes until this very day, like, okay, I'm a pro, I gotta make sure that I look good all the time. But sacrifices, yeah, like even if I don't post it on social media, I still have to get up, I still do my cardio, I still make sure that my timing of my eating is on point based around my energy and what I need for my output. Training still like 5 to 6 days a week. I don't often go out to, you know, social events. I don't go out and eat whatever I want whenever. I have my odd occasions, but I'm going to be lying to myself if I were to do that all the time and maintain the look that I do. I'm trying to think where I'm going with that.
Well, I mean, here's a relevant point. So anybody who doesn't is not yet familiar with you, you're a teeny human being. You're 4'11", right? 4'11". So think about this, bikini competitor, 4'11". And I've talked about this in places before. The world, restaurant serving sizes, portion sizes, alcoholic beverages, everything is not one size fits all. In fact, it's probably size nowadays more for men my size than I bet 2.5 times your weight, probably. Based on
How much
size,
do you weigh?
I'm about 250.
Oh yeah, wait, 250 pounds by how much is that? My math's horrible. But yeah, pretty much double.
Yeah. Well, I'm
Over
sure more
double.
than double, right? So,
Yeah, more than
anyway,
double.
point being is to go out and enjoy these things. We live in a world where women are socially conditioned, and this is a tricky one. I actually sometimes carefully will nudge at some women I coach or talk about on media is. I think a lot of people feel like, well, I should be entitled to have the wine. I should be entitled to have metaphorically or literally, the chocolate or all of the things. But this is one of these like shitty, unfair things is like all these portion sizes are one size fits all. And on average, you have women, especially if they're smaller, by relation, less muscle mass, and on average, lower metabolic rates. So therefore, those women literally can't consume the same volume of food and alcohol as men 1.5 to 2 times their size on average, right? And we have this societal expectation. You see media, like whether it's like Sex in the City or whatever else, where they're sitting down and it's martinis or drinks or wine all the time, and you know, eating out brunch, breakfast, and it's like that's not reality. And I do
No.
bring that up just so that way the everyday person actually get smacked in the face and realize, wait a second, it's not about suffering or misery. It's like there are trade-offs. You can't have it all. And the sooner you come to grips with that, you then realize, all right, I'm going to decide on the shit that matters. And because I think where people go wrong is they just simply consume way too much of the mediocre crap out of convenience that isn't even fulfilling. And then they want the good stuff anyway, and they feel guilty as shit for having everything. If you could actually triage the crap, the mediocre rubbish that you're wasting money on, get that out. You could treasure without shame the stuff that matters, and I think it can all fit. Thoughts?
100%. Yeah, I agree with everything that you said.
All right. Well, I got to tease more out of you. So let me take this a little bit further. You've talked about the sacrifices that you've made. Have you found that what you feel like is a healthy physical and mental balance between the appearance and feeling your best?
Can I just say right now, so out of the 9 years of competing, this is the first season I would say that I am at my healthiest. I feel like I'm at my most balanced and mentally and emotionally feeling at my best. This was the first time, besides COVID, that I put a show aside. I was meant to compete last month, And about 2.5 months out from that show, I decided that I was going to put it on hold because I did have other priorities such as business. But I also wanted to start taking care of, I guess, myself. And just for once, I wanted to have a couple meals out, you know, have a wine or two sometimes and just pay attention to the areas that I never really got to pay attention to throughout my whole competing journey. And I've learned so much over the years now as well. Like when I first started competing, I was so restrictive and there was a lot of things that I've learned over time that I didn't have to restrict myself with, such as like food choices or, you know, when I did my first bodybuilding show, I never ate anything outside of chicken and basil fish. And that comes with education, right? So that comes with education. So back then, coach at the time, I guess, didn't really say too much on what other foods I could bring in. So then that's all I knew. So I just went with what I knew. And over the years, I got to realize, okay, I can bring food in. I can have sugar. I can have sodium. I'm allowed to drink water. Like, I don't need to dehydrate myself up until the show day. So as I've gained that knowledge over the years, now I've definitely come to a point where, okay, now I'm in my improvement season, but I do know how to balance everything out with having a couple of meals out, but eating in moderation and still choosing the better alternatives and then still keeping in routine. But yeah.
Do you have these conversations with clients when they step in and for the first time they want to step on stage, they have this idea of what they're going to get? I don't know if it's the approval or, I mean, there's a lot of different reasons why people compete. Do you ever filter people because you feel like they're doing it for the wrong reasons? At the yes. risk of turning them away into the hands of a coach who won't care and will take their yeah. money anyway.
Yeah, 100%. I definitely have. I've pulled clients out of shows before, just before they're about to hop on stage. When I know they're in the wrong mindset, emotionally, they're already feeling like crap. And they almost feel like it's a chore to be in prep. That's when I know that someone's not in it for the right reasons. Or they get into a show and then let's just say they don't get the placing that they want and then they get so angry and then all they do is trash talk. Not me specifically, just the actual sport itself. That's also another reason why I know that the person isn't in it for the right reason. So yeah, I've had a few chats with some of my clients and then I also have clients as well that are in it for the right reasons and never realized that they were pretty much born athletes. But with competing, you know, it takes a lot of sacrifice, effort, and money. And I think that a lot of people expect so much in return, but it's actually a sport that where you don't get too much in return. You invest a lot more than what you get. You get the exposure, you get recognition. If you win, you get a trophy. But in terms of like, okay, you're going to make so much money, you're going to get business out of the whole thing. It is not like that. And I think that's a lot of people enter into that sport with that mindset because that's what I did when I first started. But I love the process itself. And it didn't matter what I had to sacrifice. Like I just love the process. So I never think of it as like, okay, I'm spending this much money. Okay, I have to do this much cardio. Oh God, now I can't have meals set out. Like it's such as like, I love it. I love bringing my food prep out when I'm eating out with my friends, or I'm fine with like not having alcohol. I'm fine with staying home. I'm fine with having to do all the hours I have to do to put it into the gym with weights and cardio. And so yeah, that's the mindset that you need. You need to be in it for the right reasons. Until you enjoy that process, that's when you'll know.
There's something you said there, and I think this is actually brilliant. It's like you almost said it in a way to allude to the fact that these things can be normal. Like, I think we have a society that thinks that these things are obsessive and unhealthy, when in fact, what you described were a lot of healthy behaviors. Now, it's where it becomes probably mentally unhealthy, rigid to the point where maybe some psychological aspect or even like physical health aspect of it takes a wrong turn. But what are we contrasting this to? The majority of people that are walking around that are categorically overweight, obese, metabolically unhealthy. I mean, that's now the majority of the population. When the hell did that become normal? And yes, we know that there's not a one-to-one linear, relation between, you know, whether or not someone is healthy and, you know, taking a look at them. But there's also this weird narrative now within the industry. And I sometimes feel like it's a bit of a grift where, you know, if anybody says anything about a relationship between, you know, if someone's overweight, obese, and I'll be careful how I say this, then it turns around as like, well, we don't know because like that, you know, because eating disorders. And it's like, Okay, cool. We know that's real, but not everybody who's lean. In fact, I would argue that the majority of people walking around who are active, eat reasonably, those people don't have eating disorders. And this is going to probably piss some people off, but I find it's weird that the people who struggle with nutrition for whatever reason, sometimes through no fault of their own, but then it leads to being obese. I mean, isn't that an eating disorder of a type? We just don't categorize it as such, right?
And yeah.
It's like,
I think some people take body positivity a little bit too far.
Yeah.
And yeah, the whole, when, like, I 80%, I would say, of this world is promoting obesity. So like the food, the activities that we do, and that's what the normal is. But really, a lot of the stuff that we do on a daily basis here is really bad, what we see around us. And so, yeah, when we're doing the stuff that's different, such as training and being an athlete and cutting, it appears as bad because it's not the normal of the majority.
And that's exactly it. You perfectly said it. And it's sort of a bit of a reframe to get people to go, wait a second, like, when did it become problematic, unhealthy, whatever, to actually engage in behavior that was overwhelmingly, you know, geared around thoughtful choices when it comes to eating healthy food, remaining active, and avoiding a lot of the commonplace things that nowadays are convenient, easy default settings that I think are contributors to an unhealthy population. So I think it's worth at least kind of keeping top of mind to stop automatically assuming that, you know, the person who's actually quite happy cooking their own meals and maybe bringing Tupperware to something. I mean, like, I think if you're bringing like Tupperware to a wedding, I mean, if you're show prepping and everybody kind of knows, that's one thing. But if you will never eat out in a nice restaurant because mm-hmm. and you just avoid those treat meals, I think that might be taking it too far. But again, each person's own experience. And I think we maybe have to come off of judging that sort of stuff a little too much. Red flags within you primarily work with women competitors, right? You have male general population, but red flags that you warn women about when they want to step on stage, both in what they can expect for themselves, the experience, but also dangers within the industry and in choosing a coach. Because you've been on both sides. You've been on both sides.
Yeah. I always ask my clients first for their main reasons of wanting to compete before anything. And I also check their history as well. Like, you know, have you had eating disorders? Have you had body dysmorphia? I mean, like, look, most of us bodybuilders, we probably do. Because we really do care about, like, our looks. But the history is what really matters, and what habits they already have to be able to compete would make a difference in how they enter into a prep.
That one makes sense. Are there any predatory behaviors you've observed within the industry? I got a feeling, hey, I don't want to perpetuate negative stereotypes, but we also know certain things go on, right? There's some local stuff I've had some criticism of, but anything that you would just warn someone to say, just be careful here?
As in which aspect?
I'd say probably like coaching, like hiring coaches, predatory behaviors.
Wait, are you talking about myself as a coach?
You've already talked about you're very much the opposite, but again, your position in the industry.
Like what to watch out for?
Yeah, in a coach that you, coaching practices that you, number one, yourself would never engage in, but even worse is like stuff that you look at and go, that's what's ruining the industry. Please stay away from it.
Yeah, I try my best not to bag other coaches or talk about. Yeah, I am that type of person. I do see coaches that have their opinions on like how coaches do other things. But
you know what? That's a gracious answer.
Crap about coaches. Look, I know a lot of coaches that do a crap job. Okay, but yeah. I'm just one that, I guess, when a client comes to me, I'll give them the best that I can for myself. When they ask questions and I know it's the wrong thing, you know, there's been coaches that talk to my clients and they go, this is how you should be doing things. That's where I'll go, okay, well, no, that's definitely not how you do things. only when it comes to that point, I would ever warn them, I guess. But yeah, when I know they're in the right mindset and they're with me, I just keep going with that.
Sure. Mm. I mean, I'll toss something out there because you gave a very political and gracious answer, and I understand that. I would say coaches that go right to the tactic of let's give, you know, women drugs, especially, you know, right, yeah, to drugs when it comes to bikini, right? You know, entry level stuff. And, you know, and then the whole tactic is drug and starve, right? And which is, yeah, something that I've seen. There have been some local people who behave that way. There's a bit of a traditional belief in that. And the way around that is to actually be an evidence-based coach who understands, mm-hmm, nutrition. You alluded to a lot of things like, hey, you can fit sugar, you know, sodium, water, that sort of stuff. There's been a lot of evolution and understanding of how to, you know, work towards a prep day. And I'm not a prep coach. I've literally been involved with putting two of my clients up on stages. I brought in an outside resource to help. And then those clients both want to continue. And then we transition those, yeah, clients full time to a coach who specialized in bodybuilding preparation, right? So, mm-hmm, not my field of expertise. I've never competed on stage. Never been my thing.
Yeah. I understand what you mean by when coaches literally just put the clients like on drugs, because I have had clients that have come from coaches that have offered those things or have given them certain things or advice. And a lot of people need to understand the basics of building muscle mass, mm-hmm, and dropping fat before they think about, okay, I'm going to hop on this because I want to gain muscle mass and put on fat. And that's where people like to rush the process, but they don't understand the basics. And what they also don't understand is that they can take as many drugs as they want, but then if they're not doing the basics, they're not going to get shit out of it. And that's where I feel like the miseducation is, like, yeah, it's misled by a lot of coaches.
And I guess that's why you getting into histories is so important, because if you filter someone who's in a rush, then they're actually, yeah, someone who's vulnerable to taking the shortcuts, but they're, mm-hmm, also vulnerable to going to a coach who will literally take their money and push them through the shortcuts, which,
yeah,
probably isn't in that person's best interest.
I'm all about the long term. And like the last thing I want is someone coming to me in the end and being like, she put me on this and, you know, like she rushed me. Like it can turn around. It can turn, mm-hmm, around. So that's why I think knowing the client's history is very, very important before you even allow them to. At the end of the day, it's up to the client if they want to go on stage or not. Yeah. But me giving that advice to go on stage is important.
All right. I've seen you talk about winning mindsets and I like this stuff. So I wanted to dig into here. I guess there's both the context of winning in competition, but also a differentiator in everyday goal success. So how do we get people to even like recognize that their mindset is the problem? Right? Do you have people coming in and they're just negative? They just don't have the willingness to do some of the hard work, anything like, mm-hmm, this. How do you approach mindset, getting people on a winning mindset?
Anyone that struggles with their mindset, I always try to let them look at the bigger picture and understand as to why they're not getting to where they want to get to. And the main reason will be because they are probably not wanting to change. They're not willing to be uncomfortable to be able to get to their results. And with every goal, you either get it done or you can just sit back and have a little cry about it, but you have to get shit done to be able to get to your results. And yeah, that's... I actually wrote something down, Andrew. Can I read it? Can I read it in my notes?
Absolutely, you can read it. I know you wanted to come in prepared.
And I really wanted to. This whole time, we've been freestyling.
You gave some thought. You obviously gave some thought to it. So the fact that you gave some thought to it, I want to hear what you have to say. Go for it.
Yeah. So it's quite positive, but I put here, with every goal you have in life, you have the choice to go and get it done, or you can just talk about it and have no action. You have to take on challenges that will come your way, because anything that involves winning or being successful will never be an easy ride. Winning and success happens when you don't give up, but not everyone is willing to take on the hardship of what's to come.
That's wonderful, right?
Yeah. I had to write that because I was like, oh, there's going to be something about goals, you know?
Well, I mean, first of all, I think that probably needs to be a social media post, right? Text-based post. This is wonderful. It's great, right? You mentioned about the willingness to change, which I think is there as well. I mean, I believe this, but what do you think about the people who just, they're not willing to change? And maybe it's rooted in, they don't want to change behavior, but maybe it's, mm-hmm, deeper. They actually are afraid, or they have something keeping them where they are. and they don't want to change physically, or they, this one comes up, they don't believe they're worthy of, feeling healthy or doing nice things for themselves. If you encountered that.
I always tell you that they get to choose, everyone gets to choose how they think and how they want to take actions on things according to the mindset that you've got for that moment. But no one can take that step for you. Like the most I could do is say, you have what it takes, you have potential, you can do this, but it's really up to the person to be able to take that action. You're in charge of your own mindset, whether it's negative or positive. You can change negative mindset into a positive if you choose to do so. But you also have to reflect on everything and think, like, what's causing you to think the way that you do? Is it another person? Are you in a relationship with someone that's holding you back? Or is it your surroundings? Is it your parents? Is it your workplace? You have to assess and look over what's making you feel the way that you do, because there's always going to be a reason. No one just thinks the way that they do for no reason. And so you find out why, that's the areas that you can sort out.
You said something there that I think is really key, is I think people need to look at their identity and their belief system and then recognize, wait a second, where did that all come from? It's a product of your experiences, your environment, and probably in a substantial way, the people you've been around growing up. I think traditionally it was probably more exclusively parents. I think now kids probably do get exposed to more different things early on, maybe through media. But at a certain point, I think it's actually a good idea to pause and say, this isn't necessarily me and my identity. These are the product, these are the attitudes that the product of the environment that I was raised in, I've existed within, and even to this day still exist within. And if you start to question at that fundamental level, you can go, are these beliefs and narratives serving me right now? And if they are not serving you, if they're holding you back from something that you feel like would leave you healthier or happier, maybe it's time to go, are these really mine, or are these relics of something else? And it's not to say, oh, my parents were bad people and had bad belief systems, but how many people, and I think women more than men, but it can be true of men, how many people had a parent, a mom, who a generation ago would talk a lot about dieting, diet culture, maybe watch a lot of Oprah and a lot of talk about whatever. I'm hard on Oprah. I think she, I think Oprah over the years has perpetuated a lot of like diet culture stuff, right? And I don't think she gets nearly enough shit for her role in that. So, I could punch up there. She's very wealthy. I don't, this is not gonna hurt her. But this is sort of, she's the most mainstream invisible example of this sort of thing, right? Every week it seems like she's on a diet. But whatever the case, like obviously media for a really long time, there's a lot of messaging about women's value being in how lean they are, how small they are, all this sort of stuff, which has a lot of complicated and negative stuff too. But if a child is hearing that growing up, then that's a belief system they're probably going to have, and everything's going to be wired around thinking about dieting and what you weigh and leanness. So that stuff can really indoctrinate some of those belief systems. But at some point you go, wait a second, why do I believe this stuff? Well, because this is what I heard growing up. It doesn't mean that it's actually objectively true, right? Everything we like, our attitudes and mindsets, none of them are objectively true. They're just relics of the world we've grown up in. We can change those.
100%. You are who you surround yourself with, and some people just don't know their potential until they're exposed to it.
I guess that's the power of having a coach with a positive mindset like you, right?
The same myself over the years.
Right.
Like I said, I've learned so much in my journey, and I at one point did have a very, very negative and bad mindset before I got into fitness and everything. And so fitness has made a huge change in my life for sure, but also the people that I've been around, relationships that I've been in. My parents, I'm very lucky. They're very, very supportive, and they always have been. But yeah, who I've surrounded myself with like 10 years ago are definitely not the people that hang around now. And that makes a huge difference.
What was the catalyst for your change in your mindset?
Sorry.
What was the catalyst for the change in your mindset back then?
Like which part?
Yeah.
I'm mental blank now.
Did you just say, screw this?
No, I'm thinking about
I want
all
to change,
those years.
or did you change environment? Like I once upon a time in my life 17 years ago, packed up my bags, booked a plane ticket, and moved across country to remove myself from an environment that I probably wasn't the most conducive to, you know.
Yeah, I wish I had that sort of mindset back then. But I was never the type that could just quickly transition or just flip things straight away. It's definitely an overtime thing. But I guess the biggest point for me, okay, I think a lot of girls are going to relate to this. So when I was going to go back to like my actual story, when I first got into fitness, I was like in the most unhealthy like relationship. So, you know, I used to smoke, I used to drink, I used to party, like all those things, but so did my partner at the time. And then I never really took care of myself like at all. Like, so career, fitness, like just nothing. I think I was just living day to day and I was working just to live for the weekend. And a lot of girls are gonna be able to relate this. My boyfriend at the time got into a relationship while he was still with me. And so he broke up with me like in the end, but I had found out that he had already been with her 6 months towards the end of our relationship, and I had no clue. And when I looked at this girl, I was like, okay, like there's a lot of things that she probably takes care of and I don't. But he also said a lot of rude things to me, like, you know, she does this, she does that. And so that really got to me. I felt really insecure and I was like, oh my gosh, like, you know, someone actually two-timed me and I had no clue. And is it because of me or is it because of him? Like, I don't know. But that's where I really had to sort stuff out for myself. I was 19 at the time, and that's where I was like, okay, I want to become a PT. I'm going to try and become a PT, but I got myself a trainer and then I got into fitness. And long story short, over time, it wasn't about that. At first it was about the revenge body. I was like, I'm going to get hot. I want him to want me back, all of those things. And yeah, so, but then later on it became about, okay, I actually love fitness. I love this feeling. I love feeling good. I love not drinking and not smoking. I feel great. And everything started turning around slowly. And that's where I realized, okay, I was the person that I was because of who I was around every single day. Mm-hmm. And so when I changed like my group of friends and slowly got to know other people that were in the industry, that's where I seen the real growth in myself. But it didn't happen straight away. It was an overtime thing for sure. And to top off, like, yeah, after 2 years, he came back. He messaged me. He's like, hey, just checking how you're going. I can see you've done really well. Like, just wondering if you want to catch up for a coffee. And I was like, I said, hey, like, he said, sorry, but I said, everything that you have done is the reason why I am where I am. So I'm actually really grateful for everything. So you don't need to. It was the best feeling. Like, it didn't leave off in bad terms in the end. I was so over it at that point. But that was where it went. It was a bad breakup, and then just recognizing my weak areas and knowing the potential that I had is what kept me going.
There's something here, and I know that, I mean, the only person I think I've seen publicly really embrace this is probably Alex Hormozi, but it's the idea of using whatever. And I think a lot of people think all these things have to come from this good and wonderful and noble place. Use what you got. And Alex talks about using anger. Now, I think things can be taken too far. And I think if you're nothing short of, you know, only motivated by pure aggression towards the world, that's probably going to go wrong sooner or later. However, my guess is if you use anger or any of these other things that we traditionally consider to be negative emotions, but we channel it into getting healthier and setting ourselves on that road and changing our environment, I mean, it's going to cascade into a lot of positive. You seem to have turned out really great. So I don't think you regret having used that as fuel, right? I've got no problem
with it. Yeah. Yeah. That's definitely it. And I have a lot of girls like on my team that have been through, I guess, something similar, and I'm able to share that experience with them. We got a lot of independent, you know, ladies on the team. But I think anything that's negative in life, you just got to turn it into a positive, and then, yeah. Not everything has to be bad.
The fact that you're relatable to your clients on many levels seems to be a concurrent theme to all this stuff. So obviously that makes you just that much more of a safe place. And like we said, relatable to those clientele. And I think that's incredible because that's all about relationships and bond. Where can people find you on social media to check out more of what you're doing to learn about you?
I only have one platform, which is Instagram. So you can find me on Shayna_Garcia_IFBPro. You can email me, but then you'll know nothing about me if you look at my email. But yeah, anyone can hit me up whenever they want to if they want advice on anything on there.
Wonderful. I would say coaches, check out what she's doing. You're going to see a great display of media on just how to showcase a lot of your clientele. I keep saying it, your media radiates a lot of positive energy, a lot of success from your clientele, and it's very authentic. I think, yes, we sometimes criticize earned, right? I think we complain sometimes that a lot of social media feels very curated, whereas I find yours actually is extraordinarily authentic, right? And it doesn't feel like it's curated authentic. It just feels like it's your being yourself on social media, not pausing to hesitate to make sure it's perfect. So I like that a lot. And I didn't mean to cut you off.
I know. No, I said thank you. I just said thank you.
And for any of the enthusiasts listening, you know, and if you're interested in this stuff, especially female enthusiasts, they're going to see stuff on your media. I think it's going to probably help them with some of their fitness goals as well. So please check out what Shayna's doing. And anybody listening, if you found this helpful, and there's one of my goals, I want to grow this even more. I mean, traditionally, this podcast has done exceptionally well, very high profile across the fitness industry, but I want to reach a little deeper into the mainstream. I'm trying to have conversations that are valuable to both coaches and a more general audience. And if you have people in your world that you think this particular episode and Shayna's media is going to be beneficial to them, please share with them. Do me a favor, send that person a link to this right in their DMs and say, hey, I was thinking of you. You'd like this. That's how you help me, because I do this for free. My main mission is still to have really fun conversations, get to know people better, showcase old friends and new through my media.
Spread positive vibes.
I really want to make our industry better. It means so much to me.
Yeah.
Shayna, thank you so much for coming on. You're absolutely wonderful.
Thank you so much for having me.